All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, Nick Swisher will be here to break down the Red Sox latest world championship.
And we'll get to Jason's Whitlock on the selfish act that stole yesterday's game from Aaron Rodgers. At least that's what he thinks. But today we start with a big story. What you got, you know?
Oh, I got Hugh Jackson, who reportedly was fired by the Cleveland Browns today after going 3-36-1 in 2+ years at the helm.
Yuck.
The team also reportedly fired offensive coordinator Todd Haley, and both firings will no doubt throw even more turmoil into Baker Mayfield's already up and down rookie year. Cleveland's interim head coach will be defensive coordinator Greg Williams, another guy with a little bit of history from Bounty Gate. They've got an offensive coordinator, I think, now, a guy named Kitchens that no one's really ever heard of. Baker Mayfield's rookie year is in the toilet, and is this move, to me, provokes more chaos. I can't defend Hugh's record, but I can't defend this decision to fire him midway through Baker Mayfield's rookie year. I just don't think this was the right thing to do right now.
I think it was. I think it was something that they should have done and been preemptive about it, even in the offseason. Even though it was John Dorsey's first year, you could just see that relationship didn't hit the ground running in terms of mutual respect. If you're John Dorsey, you're like, why do I have a coach who has not won a road game ever as a whole head coach of my organization? And why would I want this alleged quarterback whisperer or respected quarterback whisperer to now touch my new prospect that I drafted at the number one overall position, Baker Mayfield? So I think that John Dorsey fought his instincts, which were not to be the new sheriff in town and say there's a new rule, new way, and everything has to go. But you should trust yourself in those moments, because that intuition proves now to be the smartest way he should have proceeded. Hugh Jackson, say what you want about him. There was a tug of war going on between him and Todd Haley over their new prospect. John Dorsey didn't want neither one to really damage him. And I don't think Baker Mayfield's damaged goods, but like anyone who has a child or someone you're trying to mold, when you see there's wrong being committed, it's time to just change that and move on and move forward.
I don't like the firing. I don't. To your point, I think that if you had to fire them, yes, do it before the season starts. But right now, I thought that this Cleveland Browns team was playing for their head coach, Hugh Jackson, and performing well. Were they equating to wins? No, but you have to learn how to win. You talk about a team that is pulling together and trying to scrap every single quarter to find a way to win for overtime game, that lets me know that we're not giving up on our coach. We're in agreement with what he's trying to get done. We just don't know how to win. We haven't won in 2 years, 3 years. Well, the last decade.
Last 20 years. I mean,
keep exactly. going.
So I don't like it, because as a young quarterback coming into this league, the number one thing that I think is necessary is stability. And when you don't create stability in an already unstable situation, you're gonna question now Baker Mayfield and his progress moving forward.
Yeah, and I agree with you that that's not going to help the quarterback. I think that's a big reason why all those quarterbacks that go there, they never turn out to be doing anything really great, because you can't have coordinator after coordinator and head coach after head coach. Just look at the history of the great quarterbacks around the league. They've always had stability at that position. But when I first came to the league, I had Marty Schottenheimer.
Yep. Yeah.
There, okay? And it seems like the last good coach that Cleveland had was Marty Schottenheimer. It was the last time they had success. But he used to say, this is a performance-driven business. If you don't perform, then you're out of here.
Right.
And it looks like Dorsey is saying that. He's trying to set the tone as he's gotten there. I don't think he ever really liked Todd Haley. Didn't he fire him before when he got to the Chiefs and brought in Andy Reid? So I just think he's saying, let's do the clean slate. Let's let the chips fall where they may be. Let's go out and maybe, you know, if we got to tank another season, we'll get some more draft picks, and we're going to build this team going forward.
I want to be clear, though. Todd Haley was brought there by – this is his first year.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was a Hugh Jackson decision. They wanted someone to run the offense beyond Hugh Jackson. And so I just go back to, what does Baker Mayfield think right now? Halfway through his season – he is changing course already, and changing course temporarily, because Greg Williams will not be the long-term head coach of this team. Whoever this Hitchens, whoever the offensive coordinator, likely won't be there next season. And so I don't get why you would put all this upheaval right in the middle of the guy's rookie season. Confidence is a very fragile thing in that league. And if somehow in any way Baker maybe, and I know he's a very confident guy, but you get dealt enough adversity and enough setbacks in the NFL, it will rattle your confidence. I just think they could have done this at the end of the time to do it was before the season or at the end of the season, not in the middle of it.
No, you're starting to see, look, we have a short sample size. You're starting to see the erosion, the decay of what Baker Mayfield was in spirit and how he hit the field running when he got his opportunity early in the season. Think about it. The guy's regressed. Now, why is he regressing? In part, he's being coached in a way that we don't want him to continue to proceed because once we get a new regime in here, he's going to have to unlearn some of that stuff. Baker Mayfield almost looks like a guy who said, I don't need all this because when I got here day one, when my opportunity was presented, I was better than what you saw yesterday. When you're starting to see Baker Mayfield not play with the same pizzazz, same spirit, and let's be real, on script as advertised. And I think that's happening because of that tug of war with Haley and you.
Then I say make a real decision because the decision they didn't see, there was a fight between Haley and Hugh Jackson.
Right.
And we're going to kick them both out. We ain't going to make a decision. And to me, they should have made a decision. Stick with Haley or stick with Hugh Jackson. They had that option. Instead, they kicked them both out. And to me, that was a decision made in fear, in my opinion.
I 100% agree with that. You don't get rid of both of them. Make a decision. He has a rapport with both of them. But obviously, you know who you would prefer, you being John Dorsey. So just go with that.
But that could be the lesser of two evils. I don't prefer either one.
Just but you're right. Before the rest of the year, you don't prefer Greg Williams.
We got games to win, y'all.
Exactly.
And you going to win them with Greg Williams?
Right. Going into Kansas City?
No, but look, we already know the relationship Dorsey and Haley. And then we know that Hugh Jackson's record is enough to say we don't have a relationship. Because you've won three games, y'all, in 3 years. What are we talking about here?
I don't see
you
it.
I say you got nothing to lose.
You got nothing to lose.
I'm going to fire them both. I see why, but I understand what John Dorsey's doing, and I don't know. I have kids. They fight. But I always tell them, look, the next one to talk, both of y'all are getting in trouble. Mm-hmm. Okay? And that's how it is. And I think that's how we handle this situation.
Yeah,
you guys don't want to get along, both of you guys go to timeout. Mm. They're both in timeout now.
You being nice, you saying timeout on.
Yeah, look at this. We in a new time, new era.
This is the sports fan in me asking this question, I don't know if you guys as athletes ever buy into it, but can a franchise be cursed? What we're looking at Cleveland year after year, ever since Art Modell took the team out of Baltimore, it has been nothing but misery for the Cleveland Browns. How many different head coaches, no quarterback survives there. Nothing good happens for the Cleveland Browns. They, to me, are the new Chicago Cubs. Mm. You know, and the Cubs for damn near 100 years were the lovable losing Cubs. Is that what we're looking at in Cleveland? Do you guys as athletes ever think that a franchise can be cursed?
Hell no. Yeah. It's crazy that people even that this is still an evergreen storyline. Like, listen, I know it's Halloween time. Yeah. I can see by all your ex-girlfriends up here. I can see all of them up here. But dog, stop running with this Halloween theme of curse and demons and goblins. Man, look, you get on the team.
You don't believe in luck?
Or here's the definition of curse. Oh. Bad players, bad coaching, bad management, and just a bad situation. That's curse. But that can change like this. Here's a couple teams that were cursed, franchises that were cursed. Remember the Warriors, 94 to 06, and only went to the playoffs once? How the Warriors doing right now? How's that curse looking right now? Ah, your mouth's open. Okay, so let's talk about the Red Sox. Four championships. We just saw them win another one.
But it went on forever, and they believed in curses in Boston.
And so if you believe in them, break it. To me, there's no curse. New England, we know early 90s, New England was sorry as hell. No one on this panel has lost more football games than me. I don't even need to see y'all record. I know. I've been through it. It wasn't being cursed, man. I've been on teams. We end up 5-11. We started the season 4-0. Like, it's just crazy how things happen, but it's not the walls. It's not the spirits. It's just, hey, we're not executing. Simple as that.
Yeah, the curse thing is no. There is no such thing as – because what you may experience as a curse, I come in 10 years later – I didn't experience that. I feel like I can change this whole identity of the team. Yeah. So let's get it done. But to your point, it starts with management, coaches, and then players. If that isn't in agreement and in alignment and going in the right direction all together in unison and in harmony, yeah, you're going to feel like you're cursed, but you're just a bad organization.
It's just bad.
I believe in the curse.
Oh,
believe in the curse. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if there is one going on with Cleveland, there's just like with Boston, then the big comeback is coming. That means Cleveland's going to be pretty good here in a couple years, right? Wouldn't that mean something? I mean, but I believe in that.
Maybe
it's
30
years. You don't believe in karma? If I'm good to you, good things will come to you?
Well, that's a different discussion.
Yeah,
I don't believe in that either.
You don't believe
in karma? No, I don't believe in no karma.
Art Modell made one of the worst decisions in sports, in my opinion. A rabid Cleveland fan base took that team out of there to Baltimore, and you think there's no hell to pay for that?
Oh, look, Stan Kroenke made one of the worst decisions ever, took that franchise out of St. Louis. They look fine to me undefeated right there.
Yeah, but they were sorry for a while, though.
Oh, yeah.
They were sorry for a while.
It's always temporary.
Every team goes through a slump. I mean, before Brett Favre took over with the Green Bay Packers.
It's been 30 years for the Cleveland Browns.
I understand all of that, and their time will come. That doesn't mean they're breaking the curse. They're just getting better.
Yeah, and check the record. Art Modell won in Baltimore.
In Baltimore.
Okay.
In Baltimore.
Oh, so the spirit.
I'm talking about the curse is in Cleveland.
Oh, the curse is stuck in the locale. Oh. The curse can't go different places, huh? The curse got to stay
Where
still.
Where was Bill Belichick before he got to New England?
Cleveland.
Cleveland.
And he was losing.
And they did him wrong, though.
They did
look
him wrong.
Look at him now. Karma came back, and he got it.
No. Look,
I'm telling you, there's karma there.
Bill Belichick, everywhere he's been, as an assistant or a head coach, he's won everywhere except one place. Cleveland.
His first head coaching job, which he said he has learned from tremendously.
Yes.
Anywhere
they did him wrong there. They
did him wrong. But he even went to New England and was struggling his first year. Remember what he went? 5 games? And then his starting quarterback gets hurt and Tom Brady steps in and everything changes. Is that a curse? Broken? Lifted?
I'm going to tell you where you screwed me up, though, where you got me. It's like Art Modell did something bad, but somehow Cleveland's paying the price for it.
Yeah, right.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley here. We're joined now by Fox MLB analyst Nick Swisher.
Swizzy.
Yep. Woo.
Red Sox, 4th World Series title in 15 years.
Yeah, since 2004.
Is this the greatest Red Sox team ever and maybe one of baseball's greatest?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good squad. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's not a fluke that this team won 108 games during the regular season. For them to have the success that they've had, and it all starts at the top of the lineup with guys like Mookie Betts, bringing over somebody like, you know, J.D. Martinez, right? And the thing about it is when I look at different teams, I don't always look at the stars, right? I look at the role players. I look at your bench guys because it takes an entire team to win a championship, right? So think about it. The unlikely heroes, JBJ, Jackie Bradley Jr., right? The 9-hole hitter for the Boston Red Sox wins the ALCS MVP. Then we go to the World Series, right? Steve Pierce, who? Steve Pierce, right? First baseman, gets brought over halfway through the season. Huge move by them, comes over, dominating on the right-hand side. And for him to be able to pick up that World Series MVP, man, for a guy that's been in the league 12 years, 9 different squads, and he's living his best life right this second. And not only that, David Price, man, as well. For him to pitch the way he did was unbelievable. Put all that postseason stuff to rest, and he could have won the MVP as well.
Now, let's talk about the pitcher on the losing side.
I know. There's got to be a loser, right?
Okay, they roll out their ace in Clayton Kershaw, losing record in the postseason.
Yes,
ERA nearly doubles. Here's a real question I'm sorry to ask. Would the Dodgers actually be better without Clayton Kershaw?
Yeah, and my immediate answer is no. I think for what this guy has done in the regular season, right? He's got 3 Cy Youngs to his name. He's got an MVP to his name. In my mind, when I think of the Los Angeles Dodgers, he's the first guy that comes to mind. Now, we've got a stat right here. Let's put it on the board. And it shows, although he has been dominant in the regular season, he has struggled in the postseason, right? Especially in elimination games, right? Mm-hmm. Everything jumps, right? And when you need a guy in the big game, this is the guy that needs to step up. Mm. I know he is the face of your franchise, and in my mind, you could put him right next to Sandy Koufax. But at the end of the day, there is a little heat on him now because he hasn't stepped up when his team needed him the most.
Other guy catching heat in L.A., Dave Roberts.
There's a lot of heat going around out here.
Reports, though, that he may get a contract extension or a new contract. How much blame does he deserve for this loss?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's got to fall on somebody. And when you lose and the moves that are made obviously he's the guy that's going to take the heat. Now, in my opinion, when you're making these decisions, right, when they went with the all right-handed lineup, right, I think it might have been game two, right, there's a lot of moves that were going on right there. That's not just Dave Roberts. That's an organizational move. When you choose to do something like that, that's a, in my mind, those are like billion-dollar moves, right? And with an organization like the Los Angeles Dodgers, you don't just willy-nilly throw a couple names in the lineup. There's a lot of talk about that all the way through. So I don't think you can give Dave Roberts all the blame. Obviously, the moves he made didn't work out. On paper, they look good. And I think that maybe next time around, and hopefully they get a chance to come back, maybe that analytics side of the game might diminish a little bit and maybe come from the gut.
Now, you mentioned billion-dollar moves. Manny Machado won't get $1 billion.
He's going to get pretty close, bro.
But he had a forgettable October, let's be real. So should teams be leery of breaking the bank?
Yeah, I don't think you need to be leery of him because he told you exactly the type of guy he is. He told you he's not Johnny Hustle, you know? You know what he can do on the field. He's a superstar. And with superstars come along a lot of other baggage as well, right? I understand that, you know, Manny's the type of guy that he wants to be out there. But let's think about it, right? All of our athletes, they don't have to be superstars. They don't have to be good guys, right? What about Draymond Green, bro? People love that guy. He's an instigator, right? He's kind of a villain. So if Manny Machado wants to play that role, then go for it, bro. But if you're going to do it, live it, bro. Like, you know, embrace it.
You think the Yankees will make a play for Machado?
Well, you know what? I got to make some phone calls and find out. I feel like with, you know, Didi Gregorius going down with the Tommy John, obviously going to be out the entire season. Obviously, Manny Machado's name's going to pop up. He played shortstop this year for the Los Angeles Dodgers, but in my opinion, his best position is back at third base. I think they moved him over to short to maybe up his contract value, but I think you're going to see him back in the American League somewhere. I don't know if you're going to see him at shortstop. I hope he goes back to third base because he's an electric third baseman. So I think for what all that comes along with Manny Machado, do I think he deserves that money? Yes, because on the field at the end of the day, you got to put up numbers, and that's exactly what he does. But at the end of the game, you saw him, man. Punching out to end the game. I mean, that was a karma ball right there. I mean, like, you know, he stepping on first baseman's feet and the whole nine.
Take a knee in a series.
Right, you know?
Take a knee, bro.
So I feel like at the end of the day, man, you know, that comes around to bite you a little bit.
Nice jacket, Troy.
Thanks, baby. You know, I didn't want to come casual today. You know, my man.
You still
everybody's
got the
all
gray motif
up.
Going around.
That's right. I was telling my wife about that. I was like, yo, I'm not a gray guy. I'm a vibrant guy. You know what
still
I'm saying? Get some color
you,
in here.
Lock and Wiley. We're joined now by NBA champion Donte Jones. Let's move to Donte's old team, the Cavaliers, who fired coach Ty Lue yesterday after falling to 0-6 to start Cleveland's second post-LeBron James era. There was never any question that this year was going to be an uphill climb for Cleveland, and Lue expressed his gratitude to the team in a statement saying, quote, "My first time here in Cleveland was truly special. I'm very grateful for the dedication, sacrifice, and support of all the players on our team, the tremendous coaches I work with, and, of course, our incredible fans." Lastly, deep thanks to owner Dan Gilbert, former general manager David Griffin, and general manager Colby Altman for the opportunity over the last 3 years, and I only wish the organization success moving forward. All right, I got an interesting theory on this, guys. I think that Ty had some health problems at the end of last year. They come into this year, and it's a total rebuilding mode. They really don't have a go-to player. I think there's some mutual agreement here that why put all these losses on Ty Lue's resume? Why not exit out of this with Ty's reputation really solid? The organization looks like the bad guys here, but Ty... The Cavaliers are going to take 60 losses this year.
Yeah.
Why put that on your resume? Why and then stick around another year and have some more L's on your resume? And now you're damaged goods. I think Ty Lue, I think one of the reasons why Ty Lue put out a very high-roaded statement is I think he gets to walk away clean with his reputation intact and in position to be a head coach someplace else.
I like that theory, except it doesn't seem like the Cleveland Cavaliers cooperated fully with that theory in terms of we know how it is in the business world right now, especially because it's so PC. Everyone said it was an amicable parting. We parted ways. You don't hear firing because then it's like they put you on your heels and you have to respond. Now, he responded and took the high road, but it doesn't seem like that was a mutual agreement just because he was fired. Mike Brown, I remember a few years with the Lakers, 0-5, fired. That's not.
I think that's better, though. him being fired by the Cavaliers, because the Cavaliers are going to take the heat for this. Yeah. This is a bad look for Dan Gilbert and the Cavaliers. Not if it comes out Ty Lue agreed to walk away, that raises questions like, oh, I wonder if his health is okay. I wonder if, you know, he kind of quit. It got tough and he quit.
For me, in short, it was this. Look, LeBron left. Every situation is when you lose someone that grand, that void is that big. Are you a system coach? Like, were you just riding LeBron's wave, or were you really something? And they gave him 6 games to prove he was something. Too short a leash, but I think that's just the issue.
They gave him too short of a leash, yes. Did he get a raw deal? Yes. Did he get a chance to prove that he could be a system coach and could lead and could motivate and could nurture some young kids and turn them into something? No, he didn't get a chance to learn it and see if that's a type of coach that he is. But was he the right coach at the right time for a LeBron James-led team with two other stars? Yes, he did his job. He motivated well. He was well-prepared. He was a great leader. He was a great out-of-timeout coach. Like, he did a bunch of things that helped the Cavaliers get to the championship that he doesn't get credit because he had the greatest player in the world. So he got a raw deal here, but I think it's the best thing for him in the long term because, yes, as you said, he doesn't get the losses on his record. He gets to go to an organization that is looking to win a championship. Right now, the Cleveland Cavaliers are not looking to win a championship. They're trying to rebuild, and they want to move in a different direction. So at this point in time, severing ways is probably best for both parties. But he did get a raw deal because now he can't show how versatile he is as a coach and that he can lead some young guys.
Grandma always said, the way you go in is the way you're going to come out. So it's interesting the way he was brought in, and David Blatt, and then it was like Ty Lue, right, and how he was inserted. Do you think that it may have rubbed some people upstairs the wrong way because it was like, oh, he's our coach, but he's our coach coupled with LeBron, and they've tried to give him a little runway, and it was a 6-game runway, but should he have been departed when LeBron left?
I don't think so. No. I think he should be given a chance to show how versatile of a coach he is. However, the way David Blatt was brought in and the way David Blatt exited, I don't think it was a reflection of anything but him because of Ty Lue's ability to relate to the players. I think what LeBron James said is their relationship, their partnership, which was special. And I think coaches now that have to coach these young stars who are making a lot of money have to create partnerships to gain respect from these players because the money makes the relationship a little bit different. You don't have as much control over the player as you used to. Right. So now creating a relationship and a partnership for those guys was perfect because you got a chance to voice your opinion of what we're going to do as a team and to put it against the brain trust of coaches and see how they work together. And that's exactly what happened. I remember when we were in the finals, and example of Lou being a leader, you come into halftime at being down in game 7 by like 7 points, and he blacks on LeBron James. And I thought, as a player, that was the wrong thing to do because this guy's playing the whole half. He's probably going to play the whole game. He's giving everything he has, almost a triple-double at halftime. And it was the great thing to do at the right time because he barked on LeBron. LeBron almost storms out, and then he gives more. He told him he needed more from him, and he gave him more. And he had the right relationship for the greatest player in the world at that time.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, time for some big stories. Tony Gonzalez and Greg Jennings are back. Let's start in the NFL, where the trade deadline is today. We've already seen a couple of big trades involving wide receivers. First, the AFC South leading Texans traded a 4th-round pick to Denver for Demaryius Thomas, while the Eagles just gave Carson Wentz another weapon, sending a 3rd-round pick to Detroit for Golden Tate. I happen to like the Demaryius Thomas move the best. Mm. I love giving Deshaun Watson another receiving weapon. They lost Will Fuller. Pair him with DeAndre Hopkins, and I like what the Texans are doing. Not a bad move for the Eagles getting Golden Tate, but I think Demaryius Thomas has more upside.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is a true number one when things are stable, when he's properly motivated. A guy who had 5 straight 1,000-yard seasons, including 3 over 1,400 yards plus and 10 touchdowns. So the thing that I love about it is he's going to get with DeAndre Hopkins, who didn't have stability at the quarterback position, who didn't have the proper offensive line that gave his quarterback time, who didn't always have a running game and still put up numbers. So when you're around a guy like that, D. Hopkins is going to look at Demaryius and say, bro, I don't know what's been going on with your roller coaster career, but it needs to stabilize and you need to ball out. Will Fuller's gone. You're going to come in here. No excuses. I produce regardless. It's your turn and get back to greatness.
For me, I like the Philadelphia move. I like Golden Tate. The reason why, when I look at this Philadelphia Eagles team, they just extended and added to not only their running game, but obviously their passing game. Golden Tate is a running back playing wide receiver. He's a big, heavy yards after the catch guy. You put the ball in his hands quickly or down the field, he's a playmaker that can make the ball, that can make plays, like I said, off screens, extensions of the running game. You get the ball out of Carson Wentz's hand quick, fast, slot guy that they trust more than even a Nelson Aguilar, and he adds that stability. He has always made plays in Seattle, Detroit. Calvin Johnson retires, no problem. Why? We have Golden Tate, and obviously they acquired Marvin Jones Jr., but I like what the Philadelphia Eagles did.
Yeah, Philly, I thought they were going to go get a running back. You know, I think that was something that might be a little bit more needed, although Golden Tate is going to add beautifully with them. But Demaryius Thomas, like you said, Will Fuller's gone. Now you're playing with DeAndre Hopkins out there. You don't have to be the guy. You don't have to be that number one guy. Kind of like Emmanuel Sanders, they were both kind of playing off of each other. Yeah. But that big body of his, especially with the way Deshaun Watson plays. I love how he gets out of that pocket, playing with a quarterback that can make plays with his legs and allows me to get open after the play breaks down. I think Demaryius Thomas is going to excel at something like that.
Look, the Eagles got to deal with the juggernaut Los Angeles Rams in the NFC. The other reason why this move excites me more in Houston is because the AFC, to me, feels more wide open. And now, if I'm the Houston Texans and Bill O'Brien and that organization, I'm like, okay, I can't go weapon for weapon with Kansas City, but I'm a lot closer offensively. And on the other side, I got J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney. To me, the Texans and their move says, we going Super Bowl or bust this year. We're all in.
Yeah, it's always a relative experience based on who your opponents are. And if I just made a short list of NFC teams, Rams, Saints, Panthers, yeah, Seahawks, Vikings, Redskins. If I'm the Eagles, I'm behind all those teams right now. You look at the AFC, Chiefs, Pats, Steelers, Bengals, maybe if you want to go. I mean, like you said, up top right now, it's wide open. Obviously, the Chiefs and the Patriots, because they're always there, seem like the gold standard. But it's wide open for those guys to make a move, and I think Houston can.
I think both of these teams made a great decision to add to their offenses where it was needed. I like Demaryius Thomas, and I like what they're doing because the AFC South wide open, and I think they are now the front runners to win that division with adding him. They still have issues with offensive line. The reason why, you have a quarterback that got to get out the pocket all the time because he can't survive in the pocket because of the offensive line play. But what Golden Tate provides, the Eagles thrive off of RPOs, which I hate that, but it's run pass. You can extend your running game now because you have a guy who you can just get the ball in the hands of, and he will make things happen quickly and effectively.
All right, welcome back with Lock and Wiley, joined by Tony Gonzalez and Greg Jennings. Let's move to Pittsburgh.
Stay in LA.
Where all the Le'Veon Bell speculation has quieted down a bit this week, and it could be because Bell's backup, James Conner, has done enough to shut everyone up. Conner has 9 rushing touchdowns, 599 rushing yards on the year, good for second and third in the league, respectfully. Bell clearly thought holding out would prove his value, but it appears to be doing just the opposite. There was a moment 3 or 4 weeks ago, week 4, James Conner runs for like 9 yards, Steelers lose. Jeremy Fowler tweets out, Le'Veon Bell is going to be reporting soon. And that's when it was peak Le'Veon. He had won the negotiations, the holdout had worked. And then the next 3 weeks and 4 weeks have happened. Steelers can't lose. James Conner looks like the second coming of Franco Harris. And I think he's blown this negotiation. This guy's, he may sit out all, he's never getting this $14 million back. And I don't know if he's going to get the $40, $50 million in guaranteed that he thinks he's going to get this offseason.
Wrong.
Think he's going to get the money?
Yeah, he's going to get this money. A few reasons why. One, the better James Conner looks in this offense, the greater Le'Veon Bell looks in his absence. Because is James Conner better than Le'Veon Bell at playing the game of football? I thought so. No one says yes to that, right? And now you start to imagine if he were there getting those same reps, whoa, what would happen then? So a team out there is thinking that way. Maybe not all 31 other teams, but some team is saying, ooh, they're special with James Conner. They will be insane with Le'Veon Bell. Two, if you look at it and listen to it, every single person says right now Todd Gurley's the best running back in football, right? And then listen to the end of their sentence. Well, Le'Veon Bell is not playing this year. Well, with an asterisk, because Le'Veon Bell is not participating. And that lets you know his value hasn't diminished. So James Conner, continue to ball. I think Le'Veon probably, he was coming back week 7. He's like, wait a minute. This youngster is out there getting it. And I can get my rest. Wow, it satisfies both situations for him and for me. So I think.
Not my accountant.
No, he's million. Oh, he's lost $9-10 million. He's paying the price to get that money. But at the same time, I think he's going to get that. There's one team out there thinking that same way.
Yeah. Sometimes in situations like this, it's okay that both parties win. And I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the Pittsburgh Steelers sticking to their guns, and they're winning because James Conner has produced. But you look at Le'Veon Bell, he's not concerned about what James Conner is doing. He knows who he is. He's not taking those hits. He's still believing that I'm going to get paid, and I think that he will. I don't think that he'll get Todd Gurley money, but he'll come close somewhere around there with somebody else that, to your point, is going to say, man, if James Conner is doing this, we know who Le'Veon Bell is and what he can provide, and for our team, oh, give me that guy.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell, he will get paid, and I think he'll be the highest paid running back in the NFL next year. There's no doubt about it. It's got to go that way. And like you said, both teams won here. There's no long answer here. I think Le'Veon Bell accomplished what he wanted to. But here's my question now. When he does come back, we'll say that, what's his role on this team now?
That's the thing.
Does he want to play? Is it going to be more of a distraction than an addition?
No, like, I think this benefits him.
So what does he do?
Because now they're gonna be, well, we're not going to just insert you in front of James Conner. He's like, cool, I can be here. You feel me? I can be here. I still don't have to take these hits. Cool. I'm fine with that.
That sounds great, but the emotional context of being in that moment, sitting on the end of the bench and watching James Conner go, the competitor in him is going to be like, I got to get out there.
But what about this, kind of like with Earl Thomas, where he got hurt, you know, he wanted his contract negotiations. If you're him and you got this guy and you're splitting time, do you even want to play? Or do you like, look, I came this long, I already lost $9 million. I'm not going to risk $4 million or whatever, how much left he can make this year for that big contract that will be there next year.
Why do y'all think he's coming back?
That's what I'm saying. If I were him, I probably wouldn't even come back at this point.
Just to get the accrued season. I mean, whatever that does for you, you have to come back for that accrued season. Now, we're in that 2-week window where, okay, we have your rights if you signed a tender. And then going forward, we got 2 weeks to have you on our roster unpaid. And then after that, I think he shows up. And he's better than James Conner, so it will be his own volition if he sits behind Conner or if he wants to flex and say, I'll take a little risk for the team in a Super Bowl run, and go out there.
I think that would be silly of him.
Exactly.
It would.
If he's done this already to this extent, in this degree,
yeah.
I will come back. Keep the young pup in. He's doing a great job.
But how do you play that out? Pragmatically, you can't walk up to Tomlin and say, I'm not back.
You're not going to say that.
I said this is going to be tricky when he gets back, if he comes back. Otherwise, if I were him, I'd just hold out for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
He must be single. Because I'm saying, if he had a wife, no way $855,000 a week
is
just going away. He must be single. Good for you, Le'Veon. Do what you feel. All right, to London, where the Jaguars dropped to 3-5 with a loss to the Eagles Sunday. But Philly wasn't Jacksonville's only opponent across the pond, with 4 Jags defensive backs getting arrested early Saturday morning after skipping out on a $64,000 tab at a nightclub. Reportedly, the players thought their drinks were on the house and ended up spending 9 hours in custody after things got physical between them and club security. All right, I'm going to try to step out of this. I want to hear you 3 football players. Is this to me looks like a bad look, man. You out kicking it 2 days before the game. This is a bad look for the players and Doug Marrone.
For me, look, these situations when they occur, and it don't happen all the time. I mean, they're 32 teams out there, and they all got a Friday night and no curfew. It's rare that we hear these stories, but this is just a case of when good intentions can go awfully wrong.
What were the good intentions?
Just to hang out, just to chill out on a Friday with no curfew and be a grown man in the NFL and kind of live in the
strip
spoils.
Club at 4 a.m.
That's kind of early. I mean, Coach said no curfew. He didn't say 4 a.m. curfew. Like, look, I'm just going to talk from real experience and not this old air-conditioned studio and, you know, preaching down to everyone. Friday was the day to go get it early in my career, and everybody did it. I've had teammates miss practice on Saturday. I had teammates miss a playoff game. Had a teammate get beat up, showed up. The practice coach said, disappear, because we don't want to answer these questions of what happened to you on a Friday night. Then the medical evidence came out and showed, follow me here, that the night before is not the most important night of rest. It said two nights before, because if you mess up the night before, your body can run off adrenaline and you can just pull the all-nighter and get it. It said the night before. So then in the league, my latter years, we pushed it back to Thursday. Thursday was the night to go get it. Friday, chill out. Saturday, obviously, you got curfew. So I'm not going to go too hard on these cats because this is a normal activity in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm not going hard on it anyway because these are all adults. They're going to make their own decision, and we have all been on teams where guys stay out beyond all night, all night, all morning, and come straight to the facility and still do what they need to do. It just went wrong for them because of what they thought was on the house was not on the house.
Right.
That's the only issue there.
You know, when I played for the Kansas City Chiefs, we had Herman Edwards, and he's back. I'm going to teach you like a man. I'm going to treat you like a man. And I remember as a teammate, I was like, you can't do that with some of these guys because they don't know how to respond. They don't know how to have self-regulate. I blame the coaching staff for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Two nights before the game and you're in London, I know it was like us. When I went to Atlanta, we'd go out there on a Friday if we played a West Coast team. We had a curfew. You know, you had to be home by 12 o'clock. And speaking of Herman Edwards, he said, if you're a true player, then nothing happens good after 12 o'clock. Get everything that you got to get done before 12 o'clock. I don't understand why they are even out on that time of night. But at the same time, when I was younger, I ain't gonna lie either. Friday night, I used to go get home. But I was always get home around 1:30, 2 o'clock at the latest, and still go out there and catch some touchdowns.
It's in KC, brother. In Buffalo, I got home at 1, too. When I was in San Diego, straight to the facility, baby.
I will say this, too, though, because we had the Ty Montgomery situation. Barry Church, you owned it. That's what I'm talking about. Said I'm responsible for my actions. I take full responsibility. Way to own it.
And look, be real, Tony. In London, it may be 4 o'clock. My body clock is 10 o'clock at the crib. I know I walked in the office before. Yes. I was like, hey, coach, you know what time it is at the crib right now. I'm okay. I'm going to be all right. It's the body clock thing.
In Green Bay, I would imagine you were in by 10.
Man, hey, look, I was in before 10. I was married. I was never out.
Married in Green Bay? Oh, yeah. That's no life.
All right, thank you, Greg, Tony. Whitlock and Wiley. Time for some big stories. Bucky Brooks is back, and we're joined by Fox NFL analyst Greg Jennings. All right, let's move to Amari Cooper, who is gearing up for his first game as a member of the Cowboys this week. A lot of people view Dallas's decision to trade for Cooper as a way to evaluate Dak Prescott, who hasn't had a number one receiver all year. But Jerry Jones says the move was just about helping the team win.
The evaluation of Dak is not the, as to the future, is not the issue that some would have it be. We just want to now get ourselves in a position so that Dak can execute in a game-winning way. And that's it, pure and simple. He's really had the opportunity to be evaluated, if you want to just use the word and use the exercise of evaluation.
I completely buy this because I think Jerry's trying to help Dak and he's trying to evaluate Jerry Jones. I mean, Jason Garrett. Mm. He's trying to evaluate Garrett and he's trying to help Dak. I completely buy it.
I buy it too. And Jerry Jones is certainly selling it. Let's just be real about that. And his nepotism is reckless at times. I have
nepotism.
Nepotism. Who runs the Dallas Cowboys right now?
Jerry Jones.
Stop playing. Who runs the Dallas Cowboys?
Stephen Jones?
You know it. Okay, and then nepotism is not just for relatives. It's for friends, people he likes. You ever heard of a Jerry's guy? Yeah. Bill Parcells has heard of a Jerry's guy. T.O. versus a Keyshawn Johnson. One was a Parcells guy. One was a Jerry Jones guy. Me, I was a Jerry Jones guy. Don't know what he was looking at, but he said, I want you on my roster. Bill Parcells was like, that's not my guy. Right now, Jerry Jones has deemed Dak Prescott as his guy. Jimmy Johnson went through this as well. He's always run his franchise with this nepotism that I love because it's loyalty, and that's the way I would run my franchise too. Don't ask me if my son qualifies. He will be the next great in this line of lineage. But Dak Prescott's not that guy, and I don't understand why he won't continue to evaluate a guy who's given us roller coaster results so far in his few years.
Oh, see, I'm all in on the Dak Prescott thing in Dallas because I believe that Jerry Jones, look, Jerry Jones follows the Al Davis theory. You talk about his guys. Mm. When I played in Oakland, Al Davis had his guys. Everyone knew on Thursday, his guys are going to practice. That might be the only day they practice that week. But when Mr. Davis comes out, his guys are going to perform. And so for Dak Prescott, Dak Prescott gave him the flashes his rookie season when he had 11 games with a passer rating over 100, and they won a ton of games. So Jerry is saying, oh, my quarterback is a franchise quarterback. I need to make sure I get him the right stuff. So now when we go through the checklist of things that they had to get him, the offensive line had been struggling. So, you know, when everyone was giving Jason Garrett a hard time of being at the World Series, he was here trying to talk to Hudson Hauk into coming back to be the O-line coach so we can solidify the front line. Mm. Got Zeke, right? Zeke is now in shape and running the ball. Need a number one receiver? Hey, let's go get Amari Cooper because we need someone on the outside who can affect coverage. So now he's saying, hey, I'm giving my guy everything that he needs so he can get us back to where he got us his rookie season. Dak Prescott is under evaluation. He's going to get a big contract. He's going to be the Cowboys quarterback for the next decade. Jerry Jones has basically told you that with all the moves that he's made.
Should he, though? Should he be?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think what he's shown, when he's surrounded by the right stuff, he can win. Now, is the winning like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers where he's going to put up 300? No. But he can drive the car and get us to the winner's circle. I think Jerry Jones is very comfortable with Dak Prescott.
Des Bryant disagrees.
I disagree, honestly. I don't think I don't think he's under evaluation yet. And I say yet because I think Amari Cooper is the one that's going to be evaluated. What can he bring to advance our offense offensively in the passing game? So we brought you here. We want to make sure that we have – you're looking at their passing offense is 29th in the league. They're 28th overall. They're struggling. Their defense, top three. Rushing, top four. So they everything is in alignment but the passing game. And now you bring in offensive linemen. You bring in Amari Cooper. You telling me if Amari Cooper's producing, but it's not to the magnitude to where we feel like, wait a minute, can we get more out of our quarterback? Mm. If Amari Cooper doesn't produce, then it's still going to fall back on Dak Prescott because we're going to wonder, is Amari Cooper getting the opportunities? Is he getting the down the field looks? So I think he's not getting evaluated yet, but if this ship isn't righted, it's definitely going to be.
I think Jerry justifiably has hitched his wagon to Dak Prescott, and Dak Prescott has hitched his wagon to Jerry Jones.
Yes.
And when Dak Prescott came out and said that what he said about the national anthem.
Hey, brother.
That was their wedding ceremony.
It was.
and so I don't blame Jerry for being this kind of loyal. Dak Prescott has earned it. He's a ride or die for Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones needs a ride or die with Dak.
Earned it. So yeah. All I got to do is say what you want to say.
He's
to the public
played,
and I
he's
earned
played
it.
Well.
Hold on. He stepped out there on the
most controversial issue of the day and stood with his own.
Well, power to the people. I need production, brother. Has he ever thrown for four touchdowns in one game? I mean, just one. Just give me one game. So no.
You're over there playing fantasy football.
I'm playing winning football, too.
I'm winning the game. Look, lately? Those first two years, he was 22-10.
Respect.
He was 22-10 as a guy that was a fourth-round pick that no one expected much of. So he comes in, he wins. Then you put up those numbers. And at one time, at the end of his second season, in terms of 100-yard passing games, it was only him and Tom Brady sitting at the top.
I love how you're great at carving these numbers, but I want the whole resume. So now we remove everything.
Doesn't have anybody. He's playing with a bag of peanuts on the outside. A bag of peanuts. There's no one
you
that you would take.
Tom Brady's name,
face.
And Tom Brady's had peanuts before.
Tom
and
Brady's
made popcorn,
a different dude.
And made popcorn.
He's also had better coaching. He's also had better coaching.
Okay. Been at it long.
Okay. So that's the thing. Because the next guy to go is Jason Garrett.
I get you.
Because
that.
The quarterback is going to be there. I'm telling you, the quarterback is going
he
to be there.
He will be there, but
he's going to be there.
Bucky, please tell me this. In this inflated NFL with the protected rules at that position and wide receiver position, didn't you expect a little more out of Dak Prescott in production?
I mean, I went on record and said, look, I thought he was going to do some Tom Brady-like stuff.
Right.
He's not that guy yet. He's not going to put up those numbers. This team goes through Zeke and the defense. Mm. So now, when you look at it, all he has to do is be able to make a couple plays a game in the passing game. They're going to run it 35 times, and then their defense is playing lights out. The NFC East is still there for them to take.
That's true.
All right, let's get some more NFL stories. Starting in Green Bay, where the Packers were busy yesterday shipping comeback killer Ty Montgomery out of town after his disastrous kickoff return. Fumble cost Aaron Rodgers a chance to beat the Rams Sunday. They also parted ways with Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, who is ranked the fourth best safety in the league by Pro Football Focus, but reportedly has been a major source of locker room strife himself. Look, this is clear to me. They chose chemistry, locker room chemistry, over personnel. They looked at what they did against the Rams. Could have beat them, should have beat them. We're fine if our locker room is together. They didn't go the personnel route. I agree with the decision.
Wow. I guess I agree with the decision because I thought it was smart upstairs to get rid of two guys who were looking for contracts, and obviously you weren't going to pay them that money. So look at it from an NBA mindset. Get something for you instead of just letting you go out to a free agency and get nothing in return. I like that part of it, but last time I checked in the NFL, they weren't looking for choir boys. They weren't looking for everyone who was like, we're all on one page, one accord. And it's just weird that now – No. I mean, they say they are.
Patriots are?
Look, the Patriots even – do you really want to go candid on the Patriots? Because Tom Brady has some stuff to talk about. Gronkowski has some things. you really want to do this? Okay, so the whole point of it is you don't need everyone on that same page. And I think that this was just a smart upstairs move saying, hey, they don't like it here. We're going to get something out of them. Move on.
Man, I think it's tough, though, when you talk about it because it's still a players' league. And talent still trumps everything. And I'm looking at this team in comparison to the other teams within the division. They're not as talented as those other teams. And they let two good players go. Ha Clinton Dix is a really good player.
Legit.
Look, Ty Montgomery is a guy without a position, but at times he's been an effective player. I think he's out of position at running back. He was better when he was a hybrid. But when they've been at their best, it's because the Packers have had good players. They overwhelm you with their talent, and they have a really good quarterback. I think the Packers need to be careful of handing too much power and control to number 12.
Say it.
Number 12 was upset. Aaron Rodgers was upset. Ty Montgomery didn't take the knee. And look, Ty Montgomery could be wrong for that. However.
Could be.
Could be. However, the Packers are built on the Lombardi days. The Lombardi days, it was all about the team. It wasn't about one player. So they just need to be careful because we've seen players go. The next is going to be the coach. Be careful hitching your wagon to one player.
Yeah, my issue with this is we make this about Aaron Rodgers all the time, and we make this point to say, are the Packers wasting his window? Are they putting pieces around him, meaning personnel pieces? And then you take away two guys who
– One.
Two guys.
One.
Two guys. Oh, one on defense that we've talked about their defense needing guys in the secondary.
Pro bowler.
They're balling in the secondary. Ha-Ha Clinton Dix is one of the best in the business at that position at safety. And then offensively, a guy who's, again, he's a hybrid. He's an effective player when you do utilize him. Hasn't been as effective this year because you haven't needed to use him that much.
And he fumbled.
And he fumbled. He fumbled. So Aaron Rodgers doesn't throw interceptions. Mason Crosby doesn't
not
miss field goals.
Out of the end zone.
All I'm saying is when you're going with chemistry, we understand the culture in Green Bay. They don't deal with turmoil inside the locker room, and they hush all of that. This would have been suppressed. I don't think they wanted to deal with it, so they got rid of them. And I think it might hurt them in the long run because you can't always replace personnel.
And they're not helping with the illness. They're just trying to address the symptoms. And you still got that issue going on in the locker room. Part of it may be
the issue's over. What's there to talk about now? He's gone.
It's since Aaron, two guys that's in there.
Yeah, since Aaron Rodgers has been there, there's always been something going on, whether it's him and the coach or him and Brett Favre. Like, from day one, that's why he dropped in the draft. Like, I love Aaron Rodgers, the player, but in terms of, like, the teammate, it just seems like there's always something. And you can't be the common denominator in all these issues, and it's not your fault.
He didn't bring it out of the end zone, and I guarantee you the 52 guys in that locker room agree with Aaron Rodgers.
No, but he
and the two anonymous
sources. You know
sources.
What he did?
I'm going to tell you
they
right
all
now.
Agree.
I'm going to tell you right now, if they disagreed, they wouldn't say I disagree with them.
And that's
I'm
the culture.
Just, that's true.
That's the problem with the culture right there, because when Crosby misses four field goals, Aaron Rodgers like, I got your back. Everybody like, damn, I want to go there, but Aaron Rodgers got your back.
They rallied
but
he didn't behind that guy.
He
Aaron
didn't go
Rodgers.
There for Ty Montgomery, so now everybody's like, want to
Did Richie Cunningham question the fines? Hey, Aaron Rodgers is the Fonz. You don't question the Fonzarelli. Fonzarelli coming up.
Was cool.
Whitlock and Wiley, we're joined now by NBA champion Caron Butler. Let's move to the NBA, where we got another Sham bomb today with Yahoo Shams Charania reporting that Jimmy Butler has told the Timberwolves that he will sit out tonight's game against Utah, which is apparently just the beginning of a six-week-long process designed to get the All-Star traded out of Minnesota. Look, Caron, we're going to go right to you because you talked to Jimmy Butler today. What did he tell you? What should we think about this?
It was a mutual decision, which, you know, everyone know now is on the record. And it's not a thing that Jimmy wanted to, you know, jump out there and say too much about. But what he did state is that it's not a situation in which, look, I told them I want to get traded. They already know what the case is with him. But he's going to give 110% when he's out there. He is banged up. And he felt like he needed to rest. Mutual decision. Move forward.
Now, needed the rest, is that a one game? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Woj countered this in saying that, no, he's going to travel with the team, he's going to rest, but continue to play. Is it continue to play after rest, or is it continue to rest? Because this is the six-week process.
It's all a game-to-game process. Ooh. And obviously you know that there is a situation out there where it's four first-round draft picks that's on the table for the Timberwolves to decide on. And they're drawing a steep bargain with Houston. They're probably going to ask for more, like a Eric Gordon or something like that. You know, trade talks stopped before when they did it with Philadelphia when they asked to acquire Ben Simmons in the package. That's not going to happen.
Right.
So, you know, Jimmy's helping his case by playing the way that he's playing at a high level, performing at a high rate, game winner over the Lakers the other day. So his value is high, and, you know, he's a must-get piece.
Caron, I watched that Lakers game pretty closely. Jimmy Butler was phenomenal, but one of the things I noticed is, like, I saw nothing communication-wise or celebratory-wise between him and Karl Anthony Towns. That riff seems like nothing fixes that. This situation is completely unsalvageable for Jimmy Butler to stay in Minnesota.
I think the organization see that as well. It's a situation in which to move forward, to truly move forward, you have to separate ties. And Jimmy understands that as well as anybody. He understands that. He went to the table with them in the offseason, and now this is something that carried over into the season. And you want to get this handled, addressed before the trade deadline and all that stuff pushes over. Otherwise, he's going to walk away in the free agency period.
Now, we don't count teammates' money, at least outside the Pittsburgh Steelers O-line. You're not supposed to do that, right? Let's be real about this. But if he were your teammate, you in the NBA, maybe a different mindset, culture, would you respect him for the way he's going about this, Jimmy Butler?
I will respect him for being honest as a player. Here's the thing. We all get shot, you know, from front office and management the way that, you know, they feel fits for the organization. And when you're a player that can kind of dictate and control your future and the forecast of your future, do that. And he was straight honest. He's not in a situation where he's in the locker room telling these guys he don't like playing with them and then addressed it with front office and management. He went there first. Now it's the trickle-down effect, and it's falling in place in vertical order. But now, going forward, get that man moved. That's how I see it. Like, you know, as a brother, as a friend, as a fan of the game, look, move on. I know you don't want to let an all-star go because anything can happen with the projection of the lottery picks. You don't know how they're going to plan out. But get him in a good situation.
How did Jimmy Butler get here? Like, do you first look at – because I've seen it go both ways. You look at your team, you're like, man, I need to get more out of these dudes. They're good, but they're not good enough. Or you just say – I need to get away from these guys. How did we get to the point where you just got to get away from them instead of trying to get more out of them?
Yeah, you know, sometimes with a player, it's almost looking at a situation and being like, can I truly win with these guys? I'm happy. I'm having fun. And that's huge. You saw that with superstars of the past and Chris Paul's situation when he was with the Clippers. Obviously, it's something that I would have loved to see him with the organization, stay with him, but was he happy? Was he having fun? He's having more fun in Houston. They're winning games, and you want to play with people that you can be the biggest asset with, and that's why I think Jimmy C, with his game, he wants to move forward and be in the right situation.
My concern if I'm Jimmy Butler is, and it's really my concern if I'm running the T-Wolves, he's kind of undermined their trade value even more by taking this drastic step. You know, they need to get rid of him as soon as possible, which I think hurts his trade value.
I think his trade value stays at a high level because of his performance. Every time he's on that platform, he's going out there, he's scoring 30 points with arguably the best player in all of basketball still in LeBron James. He's guarding him, he's performing, he's finishing, helping win games. Your value, your stock stay the same or even rise because people see the potential and what you still bring to the table. The deal need to get done. There's four first round picks that need to get done like yesterday.
Whitlock and Wiley, time for some big stories. Greg Jennings and Sean Merriman are back. Let's start in New England, where we'll see a battle of two of the best quarterbacks ever this Sunday, with Tom Brady and the Patriots playing host to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Brady has been singing Rodgers' praises all week, and Rodgers responded in kind, acknowledging that Brady's five titles probably make him the GOAT. Yesterday, Bill Belichick was asked which QB was tougher to face.
I've never played against Tom Brady, so I'm glad he's our quarterback. He's a great quarterback. And he's, you know, he's won a lot of games for us, and hopefully he'll win a lot more. And we've won a lot of games because of him. But I've never played against Tom Brady, so it's a different context. I'd say playing against Aaron Rodgers is very, very difficult. You know, he's as good as anybody that I've faced. And we faced a lot of good ones through the years, and that's not to take anything away from anybody else. I'm just saying the guy's a great player.
Listen, let's have a discussion about Brady and Rodgers, because I think clearly Rodgers is right. The five titles make this question somewhat moot.
Yeah.
So the question would be, is Bill Belichick responsible for the difference between Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers? I say no. I say he plays a role, but I don't say he's the primary reason. I think Rodgers has more talent, and I think sometimes talent can be a curse. I think the fact that Brady's an underdog story, a sixth-round pick, not as talented, had to work harder, had to be more focused, has a different spirit and energy and leadership style around him. I think that also separates Brady from Aaron Rodgers.
I say no as well. One, very unfair to all parties involved, especially Belichick and Brady, because it's impossible to separate the two. Remember who they both were. As you said, a six-rounder who couldn't even run the 40 at the combines. Y'all saw those videos, man. Didn't look like that guy was going to translate to anything, and he became Tom Brady, the GOAT. And Belichick, before Tom Brady, is his starting quarterback. Five of his first six seasons, losing season. As a head coach, he was a losing head coach, and Tom Brady was a six-round draft choice. And they became great at the same time. So you can't separate one from the other in that respect. I look at this and say simply, Aaron Rodgers has more tangibles, more measurable talent. And that's the way that we traditionally look at any prospect. How big are you? How fast are you? How strong are you? How far can you throw it? And then Tom Brady has all that stuff. No ruler for that. No tape measure for that. But whatever that is, those intangibles, it's off the charts, and until we are able to measure the immeasurable, we would never give him his proper respect, but certainly do not undermine his greatness by comparing him to those with less accolade and those who have more talent but not more accomplishment.
You know, it's hard for me to say because I don't want to be a Patriots hater. I mean, you know, if you say something bad about the Patriots, everybody automatically assumes you're saying that Tom Brady isn't great. He is great. He'll go down to me as the best quarterback of all time when he retires, when he's done. When I lined up against Tom Brady, when I lined up against Aaron Rodgers, I wasn't worried just about Tom Brady. I was also worried about Bill Belichick, what he was going to do. You know, I was once told a long time ago that, you know, if you want to be a great defensive player, if you want to kind of be the man out there, you're going to have to start playing against these offensive coordinators and head coaches, because these are the people that's going to go out and start creating havoc for you. All these teams that Tom Brady's had in the past, and some of the ones of recent, Bill Belichick has implemented these guys in order to build and put people around them. Aaron Rodgers, what did Mike McCarthy do for him? Aaron Rodgers created these plays. Aaron Rodgers extended these plays downfield. Aaron Rodgers made magic happen. If you put in the two, and I know it's unfair because Brady does have the titles, and that's why I can't go with Tom Brady over Aaron Rodgers, because he's had help. Aaron Rodgers hasn't. So I can't – it's unfair because people are always going to say that the rings matter more than anything else, but I can't see Tom Brady and
– You think Rodgers has five rings if he's playing for Bill Belichick?
Oh, no doubt about it. I think that even the quote that Tom Brady said, if he played here, that he would have 7,000 yards. That was telling you right there, right then and there, that, you know what? He's better than me. If he was here with this coach and this organization, he would be better. But he hasn't had the help.
This is easy for me. Honestly, it really is. This is no disrespect to Tom Brady. I know how great he is, and he is the GOAT because of the 5 Super Bowls and all of the other things that he's done in his career. But when you look at his coach, he not only is his coach, he's made the personnel decisions. He's been the guy putting the pieces around him to make him better. On the other side, defensively, you look at Mike McCarthy, he's not making those type of decisions. He's not making personnel decisions, just coached his football team. And he hasn't been able to get that done. It hasn't equated to what they've been able to do, they being Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. When you look at those two, you can't say if one were gone, they would still have the same success. You can't say that. So for me, I look at Aaron Rodgers and I look and say, shoot, if Mike McCarthy was gone, would he have more success? Probably. Mm. So that's how I look at it. I mean, you put him with Bill Belichick, and you're telling me Aaron Rodgers still has one?
It takes a different personality to deal with Bill Belichick and his way. So Aaron Rodgers' personality has to fit with Belichick.
I understand that, but I feel like, and maybe it doesn't mesh when he first took over, but if you were to ask him to swap right now, I think Aaron Rodgers has such a high respect and holds Belichick in such a high regard, he would do whatever that man asked him to do. Whatever.
But it's not fair to compare a full-grown Bill Belichick and his resume and accomplishments and then swap with Aaron Rodgers right now, because you wouldn't have done this puppy Bill Belichick. And that's my point. Day one Belichick and day one Brady, nobody's sitting there saying greatest coach of all time, greatest quarterback of all time. They built this together, and to take the hammer from one and the nails from the other, to me, is absurd, because as Whitlock said, we had to go through this together, and not everybody's down for that ride.
I totally agree with that. But my point is, if you have them together, you can't sit here and say, oh, yeah, this is all Tom Brady. When we look at the Green Bay Packers, we ever say,
oh, yeah,
Mike McCarthy has, he is every, we don't even consider that. Are you kidding me?
Our poor death.
Tell you how you really feel about Mike McCarthy.
No, I love Mike. I do.
You sure?
Did he retire you?
I do.
Did Mike McCarthy retire you?
Not at all.
Yes, he did.
It had nothing to do with Mike. It had nothing to do with you. But when it comes to coaching, I will never say Mike McCarthy is Bill Belichick.
Never.
No.
Oh, way to go on a limb there.
Hey,
drop the mic.
That's my point.
Yeah, but we get that part.
So you're saying if Belichick was able to have Aaron Rodgers, and I like the way Belichick did it. He's not gonna give Tom too much credit either.
No.
I never played against Tom. And he never said, Tom is a great quarterback. Tom is the best quarterback playing in the game. But he mentioned that, Tom. Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks playing in the game.
I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley. It's time to put on our thinking caps and pretend like Marcellus is smarter than the rest of us just because he went to an Ivy League school. Sean Merriman is back. I'm a journalist. We know that Marcellus went to Columbia, put on our thinking caps. Darnell, bring out Marcellus's thinking cap. We're going to dive into some of the deeper issues of the day.
I need tea and crumpets next time.
I know we're starting with a little humor, but we're about to dive into a more serious subject.
Yes, we are.
Get your minds ready for that. All right, let's move to Sean Merriman's alma mater, the University of Maryland, where school president Wallace Lowe reversed course last night and fired head football coach DJ Durkin. The university's Board of Regents had initially decided to reinstate Durkin after an investigation of the program's culture following the death of offensive lineman Jordan McNair. That decision was met with fierce resistance, with some of Durkin's own players walking out on him during a meeting and the student body planning campus-wide protest. Even Governor Larry Hogan weighed in, saying, quote, I am deeply troubled by the lack of transparency from the Board of Regents and deeply concerned about how they could have possibly arrived at the decisions announced yesterday. I share the concerns of many Marylanders and believe they very strongly that more must be done to restore public trust. Maryland has made quite a mess here, but I'm not so, and some people will say this is embarrassing what's happened. I'm not that person. I will not say that. I don't really care how you arrive at the right decision. If you arrive at the right decision, I'm going to give you credit. Maryland made a mistake, I think, with the initial reinstatement. They course corrected very quickly. I don't believe this is embarrassing for Maryland.
Agreed. It's not embarrassing. The end justifies the means. So how you got there, okay, that's secondary to your arrival at this place. And where they are right now highlights to me that they still don't know how to assess what a toxic culture looks like. I tell you why. Because culture is intangible. It's nothing you can really grab. You can see results from a culture, but you can't be in a culture and say, this is this type of culture. You can start to make some estimations, summations, but what you have to do is anticipate. What you have to do is see what these elements are that exist and know that your conditions before, you said they were toxic. You said you had a strength coach that obviously pushed the wrong buttons and pushed too hard, pushed too far. And then you have people who didn't respond appropriately in that moment of tragedy. And then you said after investigation, that you know what that culture looked like. You know what you want your culture to look like, and then made a step in that direction. And then you didn't anticipate what was coming back your direction, which is going to be the same elements that you need to assess if you know what a culture's supposed to look like. You have not cured your ills. You have now just addressed symptoms of backlash and criticism. But there will be a day going forward when you think you have the proper culture, but you just showed that you don't have foresight. You just showed you don't know what consequence really looks like. So if I'm a player on that campus, if I'm anyone surrounding that environment, I'm starting to say, do you know which way is up? Because it shouldn't take 24 hours for you to go and flip your decision when you should have anticipated this backlash in the first place and made the decision based on that.
You know, Whit, it may not be embarrassing for you, but it's embarrassing for me coming from PG County, Maryland. I grew up 20 minutes from the school. I committed to the University of Maryland as a junior. Grew up there, born and raised. I know the area quite well. It's a sticky situation because a young man had lost his life. So you kind of don't want to speak too much on the coach. You don't want to speak too much of the culture. I mean, first, you have to acknowledge that Jordan McNair lost his life. From the outside looking in and then really finding out what happened in the situation, immediately, anybody who had a hand in it, trainers, anybody who physically seen this kid's condition running up to a 106-degree fever or degree, whatever he had, those people should immediately be gone right away. You saw it. You could have prevented it. This whole situation could have been preventable. Boom, that's done. You don't talk about it anymore. Then you run your investigation on the coach and the staff, the culture, and you see all these things going on. You made your decision. Before everything happened, you make your decision and you stick with it. Do not let the public or anyone else play a factor in what you have going on. If you don't know that bringing Coach DJ Durkin back in the building that's going to be a problem, I don't know what to tell you. We've seen it earlier this year with Urban Meyer. They made a decision. They brought him back. He's still getting backlash right now, but they already made a decision that this is our coach and we're moving forward with it. If you make the decision and you let this whole thing blow up in your face and you don't know this coming, it just shows that somebody mishandled this thing, not only from the start, but even when they had the chance to go back in it and look at it again and now make a decision. I'm from the area. I've watched them bring coaches in and out in the last few years. Randy Etzel and, you know, the coach, you know, they're bringing guys in and out, inside and out. You don't have any of the former players who went there when we won games that's from that Maryland, D.C., Virginia area. Guys who know the area, been there, know the culture. You don't have them as involved anymore because you're making decisions with coaches and personnel going forward without having anybody involved. Look at all the great schools, Ohio State, Florida State, Florida. These guys all come back and be a part of their university and their schools because they're involved in what happens.
Do you agree with this decision to let DJ Durkin go, or are you disappointed by it?
I think that Durkin was a good coach going for the future for Maryland. I think he was a great recruiter. I think that he had a good energy about him originally coming there and being able to turn the program around. he wasn't good enough. He wasn't Urban Meyer status. If something like this could happen and them still move forward with him. If Urban Meyer was there and they had a chance to win a championship, this might be a total different conversation. We know the NFL, college, whoever, deal with more things with players, anybody else, off the field, troubles, whatever it is, if you can produce. If you can't produce, you're going to be out of there. So this thing not only was mismanaged and mishandled from the start, they went back in it and mishandled it again. Yeah. That's what the problem come in at.
That's my issue. Not the wins and losses, because there's a loss that you can never recover from, a loss of life. So it's not parallel, analogous to me with Urban Meyer per se. But I will go there to that mismanagement point. Ooh, not only did they mismanage it in terms of response from the outside, but they mismanaged it internally. Think about it. The criticism, that avalanche that came in the 24 hours when they reinstated DJ Durkin was something you should have anticipated. But, you know, as we know, don't let your neighbors run your house. Like, if you say this is the way it's going to be,
that's it.
Everybody who comes in here is going to have to respect this or, okay, have your opinion on the outside.
Okay.
One, and here's the second point. Then you give it to me, Whitlock? The Board of Regents is a 17-member board.
Well.
That is governed and appointed by the governor. The same governor in 24 hours who obviously was not on the same page with his Board of Regents, correct?
Yes.
So look at that internal mismanagement. You have a board that is hired by one individual who turns on that same board's decision within 24 hours.
Being very close to the Ball State program, I see that all the time. A board of trustees appointed by the governor, not on the same page as the people on campus. That's commonplace. But however, Marcel, as a parent, and yes, again, I just analogize the parent, I don't have a problem with Maryland making a mistake and then correcting. You never make a mistake with your child and then have to course correct very quickly. And again, that's something you're highly invested in. You and your wife give a lot of thought to, but you can still make mistakes. I just think when I look at what they couldn't anticipate, which became very clear, is just the dissension within their own program. Mm. You've got kids fighting with other kids,
yeah,
as over this suspension. You've got a player that is talking about he was beaten up or got in a fight, lost the fight or whatever, because the kids, the players are fighting amongst themselves. And, Sean, that was my position yesterday, and I stand with it today. DJ Durkin, to me, we're letting him off the hook. We want to blame Maryland, the Board of Regents, blah, blah. DJ Durkin should have been smart enough as a coach to realize he wasn't in position to lead this team moving forward. He should have worked out a resignation, in my opinion.
I think so, too. And even going forward in his career, you know, if he get another coaching job somewhere else, if you go and handle this particular situation correctly, maybe it might not have that big of a punch down the road, but you didn't. If you don't think that after a kid losing his life, that you can walk back in that building and you had a hand or you could have prevented this or you could have went down to that strength conditioning coach after there were five or six or seven different complaints or went to one of your assistant coaches after there was complaints and you can walk back in that building after your brother, one of your teammates or best friend, whatever, had passed away and you think you're going to walk back in that building and it's going to be okay, you have to make a decision right then and there what you're going to do.
And he did not handle it well. Thank you, Sean. All right, welcome back to the show, Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by five-time NBA All-Star Tim Hardaway. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, let's start in Minnesota, where Jimmy Butler may have taken the night off, but Derrick Rose didn't, dropping a career-high 50 points and a win over the Jazz.
Wet.
Rose has fallen pretty far since his MVP year back in 2011, and he was emotional after his big night.
You and your career-high 50 points. What does it mean to you, Derek?
Everything, man. I work my ass off, bro. I wouldn't have did this for the franchise, the organization, the fans, everybody, man. I wouldn't be able to play the way I play, man.
Wow, that was amazing last night. Mm. I don't know how I feel, though. I don't know. This is the fourth guy in 2 weeks of the NBA season that scored 50 points. The rules have changed. It's an easier offensive game for everybody, but particularly perimeter players. I'm not sure if Derrick Rose is all the way back, but he's certainly better than I ever expected him to be again.
Yeah, I'm going to respect him for climbing that hill once again. And you talk about injuries and adversity. It's one thing to just climb the hill in the first place and become an MVP of a league, basketball especially. Every corner has a basketball court. Every kid is walking around with all this gear on, thinking they're going to be the next great. You became that. Stories of this guy in high school where NBA players used to drive and fly to play pickup games with him while he was in high school. I heard those stories. Amazing. He climbs that mountain, gets knocked back down, and he's trying to climb it again. And to accomplish that, a career high at this stage of his career, nothing but respect. I'm not going to give it to the rules. Because the people who have 50 points this year, their names are Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Blake Griffin. So they're not letting everybody get 50 points. And obviously, he had one of those memorable nights.
I'm not giving it to the rules either. It's real personal for me to see Derrick Rose. I'm from Chicago, south side of Chicago. He went to Simeon, one of my rival schools, when I played at Carver High School. So I know the type of hill he's been climbing up ever since he's been hurt. And trying to get back to 100% and play at a high level like he used to. And just to see him go out there and just play for fun and enjoy himself and do it in a way that he know he can do it and he shows that he's 100%, that's great. And when I talk to him a lot during off season, when I see him, and I make sure that his head is all right, because he was at a stage. Like, he didn't know whether he wanted to come back and play or whether he was going to retire. So, he was at that stage where, we was worried about him. We was definitely worried about him. So to see him go out there and score 50. So I'm not giving into the rules, but see him score 50, that's a remarkable triumph for him.
Jeff Teague didn't play last night. I'm wondering, Tim, do you believe, can Derrick Rose be 82-game starter or a regular starter in this league on a playoff-worthy team?
I think he can. I think, they missed Jimmy Butler last night, Teague and Tyler's. I think his confidence level is up now. He knows his body is stronger. He knows that he can go out there and help a team out. Yes, I think he could do it for 82 games. Starting point guard.
And that body heals before that mind. To go sixth gear is the toughest part. To trust yourself again, to do all the things he did in theatrics. That's why I give him so much props, man.
All right, let's move to the Warriors, who moved to 8-1 with a win over the Pelicans last night, thanks to another big game out of Steph Curry. The two-time MVP has at times taken a back seat since Kevin Durant arrived in Oakland. But with questions swirling this year about Durant's impending free agency, Curry has clearly been the top dog in Golden State and might actually be having his best season yet with career highs in points, shooting, three-pointers, and defensive rebounds. Tim, I told Marcellus this, I think, earlier in the week. The better Steph Curry plays, to me, the more likely it is Kevin Durant moves on. If Steph reemerges as the clear top dog, throwing this out to both of you, can Kevin Durant really stay there?
I think he can stay there, but, Steph Curry has always been a top dog. Everybody just think that because KD is there, KD won two championships with them and MVP in a championship, that Steph Curry is not the top dog. Steph Curry is still the
Why
top
do you say
dog
that?
Because he still runs the team. The team at times without Steph Curry is lost. Without him being on the floor, even though they look for Kevin Durant to do a little bit more, Steph Curry, they still miss his leadership out there. They still miss his threat out there, and they still miss his charisma out there on the court too. As you saw, if they still need a basket, they still go to KD because he can deliver an easier shot more than
7 foot. Yeah,
yes, more than Steph Curry can. So I still think that Curry is the top dog. And the way free agency is today, who knows and how Kevin Durant's thinking is. But you got to understand, he wants to be the highest paid player and he wants to be the top, you know, like the highest player on his team. And, you know, it go either way with the Warriors or he go somewhere else, but he wants to definitely be the highest paid player on his team.
Yeah, I mean, talk like that, Whitlock. Like, the better Steph is, the more Durant wants to dip and go away. That's what broke up Run DMC. Like, you know, seriously, like, oh, man, you hear Run? DMC ain't getting no shine. Next thing you know, I'm 20 years away from that moment, still waiting on a comeback tour, because you just got to allow these two guys to play under Steph's umbrella, his mentality of selflessness. That's why it's his team. It's not so much just the production. We always look at this team and realize we don't see stars just get along like that. And they have this Voltron effect where everyone plugs in at the proper place. And you could talk about each one of them, and they all have their individual lane, and there's nothing to interrupt them going out there and getting their buckets. I got to respect that he's going to stay regardless of what Steph Curry does. And, or he's going to leave because he wants to get paid.
Yeah, why not stay and have a dynasty there for, you know, 4, 5, 6 more years? Mm. Because at this particular stage, if they healthy, can't nobody be.
I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why, Tim. Because they made a movie called The King of New York. They've never made a movie called The King of San Francisco, The King of Oakland. And the New York Knicks are sitting out there. And if Kevin Durant ever wants to be in the same conversation with LeBron James, he needs his own team and a big platform like New York. Why wouldn't that be appealing to him?
I don't think so. I you know, his name is up there right now as 1-2, LeBron James or Kevin Durant.
No, no, it's not 1-2.
Well, as 2.
Yeah,
as
2. 1-2.
Okay.
Not 1-2.
I can agree with that.
Yeah.
But okay. You got to also understand, if he goes to New York, it still will be the same way. LeBron will be number one. Kevin Durant will be number two. It doesn't make a difference.
But he would have a megaphone and a platform and could bring a star franchise since, what, 1973, a championship?
True.
You do that with that megaphone in New York and we the Mecca, we the best basketball place in the world, and you win there, Durant, that's how you start to trump a Lakers team that's still trying to figure it out. You don't think that will be the leapfrog number one?
I still think
no?
Until LeBron retire or he, you know, something else happens. I still think LeBron is number one.
All right, we got to end on this note. You said Run DMC, and when you made that analogy, I think of EPMD.
Uh-huh.
Eric and Paris breaking up
Yeah.
broke my heart. And when they got back together, it was never the same.
It was never the same, see?